This is KGMU, Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins. It is just past 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning and it is time for one of my personal favourite shows of the year. It's our annual Best Books of the Year show and we have in studio our friends from the Boulder Bookstore, Stephanie Schindhelm, who is the Marketing and Promotions Manager at the Boulder Bookstore, Liesl Freudenstein, who is the Head of Children and Young Adult Books, and Arsene Kashkashian, Head Buyer at the Boulder Bookstore and co-host of the Radio Book Club, all joining us live in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now we are also we also have the list of the books that we're talking about on news.kgnu.org on our website, so you can follow along. And this is a great show because these are incredible booksellers, and so you really know what makes a good book. And we have the lists of everybody's favorite books, including some of my faves as well. Arsene, we'll start with you because there are a couple of books that are on your list that actually were featured as part of the Radio Book Club this year. Let's take us through a couple of your favorite picks.
All right. So the first one is The River by Peter Heller. And we've featured him a number of times on the book club. I thought this is kind of an adventure novel. Two college kids going down a river and then they find this woman in distress. And the next thing they know, they're being chased by a wildfire. And also the woman's husband, seems to be lying in wait for them with a gun down the river. And so it's a real adventure story. And I thought his descriptions of the area were very evocative. And it just keeps the pace is really going. If you like Peter Heller, I think this is his finest book since Dog Stars. Some people might even like him more than Dog Stars. The other book on my list that we featured on the radio show is Sabrina and Karina by Colley Fiorito Anstein. And that's a collection of short stories, and she was nominated for the National Book Award for it. Unfortunately, she didn't win. She was a finalist. But she's really giving us the stories of Latino and Chicano women living in Colorado, mostly Denver, but also rural Colorado. And what I really liked about the book is the stories are, even though they have the similarities, they're all different. Some are about teenagers. Some are about a woman who's in her 80s. And they face all different things. I just thought it was a great collection of short stories. They're fun to read. It's an insight into a population that hasn't had as much of a voice as many other populations have had. So those are two of my favorites that we also featured on the show.
But I want to let folks know that interview with Callie, that will actually air on the 4th Thursday in December. We've heard snippets of that, though, in the build-up to the National Book Awards. And she talks a lot about gentrification in Denver, really from her own experience, because she was raised there. She talks about, in the book club, edition that people can hear coming up in later this month, really that sense of displacement for so many of these communities that have been in this area for so many generations, and now due to variety of factors, mostly economic and social, they're being displaced. And I think she writes so beautifully about that.
Well, she does a good job of bringing about the emotional aspects of that displacement. You know, it's not mainly even an economic thing. It's mainly an emotional thing that you don't have your neighborhood anymore. The places where you visited your grandmother, the house you grew up in, is no longer in your family. And what does that do to you emotionally? And I think she does an excellent job bringing that up in these stories.
Yeah, and in the interview, I remember she told me that there are some streets in Denver she actually can't walk down because it's so painful for her to see how much it's changed. Mm-hmm. Entire neighborhoods have had the names changed. It's like an eradication almost of the identity from previous residents.
Yeah, they get all these fancier names to make them seem more appealing to people who want to move in. Who are gentrifying it, and you know, things, simple things like Northside maybe, or things like that, are fading away. And she really does catalog the change that's going on in Denver, but also it's going on around the country.
Well, that's Sabrina and Karina by a local author, Callie Fajardo Anstein. And it was, as we have said, a National Book Award finalist. We're all rooting for her to get that award, but I know there are great things ahead for Callie, and we're looking forward to her upcoming works. Well, we're going to move on now to some young readers and young authors. Liesl Freudenstein, you are the Head of Children's and Young Adult Books. So what were some of the offerings that particularly appealed to you this year?
Well, I actually have, since I have such a large age range, I do have, you know, three picture books, a couple of middle grade sort of in between readers, and then a couple of teen books on my list. So it kind of reaches a wide audience. My picture books that I would like to call out would be Being Edie is Hard Today. And I really like the use of the white space in it. It's beautiful watercolors and ink drawings, and it's basically depicts, it tells the story of waking up and not feeling like yourself and just the day sort of crumbling around. So Edie keeps pretending that she's a sloth or she's a worm, like she can't brush her teeth today because worms don't have hands. Butterflies eat with their antennae, so she's like basically, you know, chewing, eating her food with her hands. But when she gets to school, it becomes sort of, it snowballs and becomes a lot worse. The kids are teasing her, so she pretends she's a kraken. And it opens up into these beautiful watercolor spreads of what she's sort of feeling. And it's just the way it just takes over the whole page is pretty wonderful. And then, of course, she gets in trouble. So that's a problem.
Now, that's a picture book. And I mean,
it is a picture book.
We often think of picture books really just appealing to younger readers, but the messaging of that, I think, would appeal to older readers as well, even up to middle school.
Oh, definitely. And it's wonderful. And I do believe that it could go, you know, for multiple readings and spark lots of conversations about feelings and, you know, sometimes it's a bad day. I do have another book, Sofia Valdez, Future Prez, which is the fourth book in sort of the Iggy Peck architect, Rosie Revere engineer, Ada Twist scientist sort of couplet. She's eventually, I heard in an interview, that she's going to do most of the kids in the class or all the kids in the class and kind of keep going with this sort of thing. And this one is obviously about leadership and seeing a problem in her neighborhood and sort of tackling the problem and inspiring everyone to get involved with it. And so it's about, you know, seeing a problem and tackling the problem and being a strong leader. It does have great rhymes. It's a much longer format, so it's definitely for a slightly older kid. And then my other favorite one is Pluto gets a call. And it's essentially a space book, so it's going to go through all the planets in the solar system, but it starts out introducing Pluto, and he's very excited because he's a planet, but then he gets a phone call as he's, you know, talking to you on the page. He's like, hold on, I got to take the phone call. It's from, you know, scientists on Earth. It's very important. So he takes it, and he's been downgraded to a not planet.
Which is true.
Yes. And so poor Pluto.
I don't think the phone call is true.
No. You don't think they actually called Pluto to tell Pluto that we've decided no more?
But he goes to and visits all of us. He says, well, the tour must go on. And he still, you know, shows you all the different planets and their sort of uniqueness. And they all feel bad for him. But, you know, it's a fabulous book. It's really great.
At what age range would that appeal to?
You know, probably, again, 4 to 7. Maybe slightly younger, maybe more 4 to 6. It's just, but it does have a lot of great scientific facts in it. And you can sort of read it and other planets and the asteroids and everyone's talking to one another. And each planet really comes alive in their personalities. Jupiter is very grumpy because of the storm that he always has. And he's full of gas. So there's some gas jokes.
We all pass gas, even planets. Yes. Or previous planets. But we'll check back in with Liesl in a few minutes to talk maybe about some of the books that might appeal to older readers and some teens. But we'll move on to Stephanie Schindhelm, who is the marketing and promotions manager at the Boulder Bookstore. What were some of your favorite reads this year?
Well, my favorite book of the year is The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern. And I loved The Night Circus when that came out in 2011, I think. And we've all sort of just been waiting for her to write another book. And so she's finally followed up and written another book. And it's not a sequel at all to The Night Circus. It's completely separate. But there's a lot of the fantastical elements and her descriptions continue in a very similar vein in The Starless Sea. But again, a completely different story. But she's just such a wonderful writer, and especially of fantasy. She's really able to put you into this place where you really feel it. Like, she just hits all the senses. Like, she's really great at describing smells in such a way. Like, there's an interaction between two characters where they're in the dark, but the main character, Zachary, can like smell like the cigarette smoke and this lemon, and just like, it just like really puts you into this place.
And what's the plot? Like, what's
well, it's essentially a love story to books and reading. At its heart, it's about sort of a magical underground library. And the people who guard the stories of the world. And it's told in such a way that it alternates between all these different stories. So it kind of takes you a while to figure out how all of these stories intertwine. So it starts by telling, like, it starts by sort of telling you like a fairy tale, a very basic fairy tale, and then you get into this, the main character Zachary Ezra Rollins, and he goes into the library at his school, and you know he's in college, and he ends up with this book, and he's reading the story, and one of the stories is about him. And it kind of floors. He's like, this story, and it's about a little boy, and he sees this doorway just appear sort of out of like this alley he's always going down every day. And he goes down one day, and there's this beautiful drawn door on the wall, and he almost turns, he almost like goes to see, it's like, it's clearly not a real door, but it looks like maybe it's a real door. And so he kind of reaches to turn the door handle and decides maybe no, and walks on. And this is the story that's in this book. And he kind of realizes like, I could have actually opened that door. And it kind of leads him on this whole path down to finding this library and the people involved in it. And it's, and throughout you get all these little different stories about owls and feathers and keys and hearts and all these little fables and myths, and then eventually you kind of see how they all intertwine and come together. It's one of those books that once you finish reading it, you kind of want to start immediately again, so that, because you know now what all the stories mean, so you want to read it and see how everything connects and comes together. And it was just really beautifully written and magical, and I just loved it.
That's The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern. What else did you enjoy reading this year, Stephanie?
Another different sort of fantasy is by G. Willow Wilson, The Bird King. And I think there's been a big trend lately in trying to have more fantasy that's not sort of the standard white guy going on an adventure. And I think this is an excellent example of, you know, it's written by a woman, and the main character is a really strong Muslim woman set in Spain in like the 14 or 1500s. And it's got a lot of Muslim elements and from that whole, their mythology, and there are jinns and other magical elements. And it's essentially in Spain, in Granada, and the main character Fatima is a concubine. She's like the most important concubine in the Muslim royal palace. And her best friend Hassan is a map maker, but he's sort of a magical map maker. Like he can make maps of places he's never been before, and he can kind of sort of bend what reality is when he makes his maps. To like, he can like make a doorway that leads to a place that's not like you wouldn't actually be able to go there. And then the Inquisition comes in at the end of the fall of Granada, and they see Hassan as being like possessed by the devil. So they're like, all right, this needs to stop. We need to, you know, execute this guy. So Fatima finds out that this is going to happen, and she grabs Hassan, and they go on the run and use sort of his magical map making abilities to be able to go on the run and go on this whole magical journey. And it was just really beautifully written. And I'm really excited to see more of this sort of style of fantasy coming forth. So
I love that book as well, The Bird King. And just a shout out, because G. Willow Wilson, originally from Boulder, a local author, and she's been involved in really increasing diversity in representation in comic books, you know, particularly, you know, Muslim women and stuff. So it's great to see her on this top 10 list. I'm just going to give one of the books that I really loved this year. It's called Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. And it's written by New Yorker contributor Patrick Radden Keefe. I'm going to put this out there because so many people are asking me about Brexit, and why is Ireland upset about Brexit, and what the heck is going on? It's a very complicated history there, and it's still going on. But this is a really interesting snapshot and look at some of the recent history of Northern Ireland and the so-called troubles up there from a, you know, specific vantage point. Really well written, and has appeared on the best books of the year list for a variety of different publications. So that's one of my picks this year. Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. If you're interested in what's going on, why people in Ireland are upset about Brexit, this is one book that could potentially shine a light on there. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, delighted to be in studio with three colleagues from the Boulder Bookstore. Arsene Kashkashian, who is the head buyer, Fire. Also, my co-host in the Radio Book Club, Liesl Frudenstein, who is the head of children's books, and Stephanie Schindhelm, who is marketing and promotions manager. This is our annual Best Books of the Year show, where we get to talk about books, something that we love to do here on KGNU, and no better folk to have in the studio to talk about books. Well, Arsen, some of your other faves from 2019.
Well, one of my favorites is a novel called The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu. Maza is originally from Ethiopia. She lives in New York now. But this is a story. It reminded me somewhat of what Stephanie was saying. We're hearing these different voices. This is historical fiction. It's not fantasy. But it's about the Italian invasion of Ethiopia, which was in some way the opening salvo to World War II. And it predates the Spanish Civil War by a year or two. And in this book, she talks about a couple different characters. One of the main characters is Harut, who is a poor servant, basically a slave in a household. But during the war, everybody goes to war. The whole household goes. And so you hear about these female soldiers. And this was based, she got the idea for the novel based when she found out what her grandmother's story was, that her grandmother served in the war, that her grandfather wasn't really constitutionally able to go to war, didn't want to go to war. And so she wanted the family gun and to go to war. And the grandmother, this isn't in the book, but the grandmother actually sued her father to get the gun. And she won the lawsuit so she could fight in the war. Maza didn't find out the story till she was an adult, you know, in passing, you know, how family stories get passed down. But what she does in this novel is, so she tells it from the Ethiopian point of view, but she also tells it from the Italian point of view, from the higher up. So she's going all around this battlefield. And one of the main Italian characters is a guy who takes photographs. And he brought his camera to the war because that's what he does as a hobby. It's almost a comfort to him. But then he ends up, if you're going with a camera to a war, you're going to end up shooting atrocities, right? And so it's really an amazing book. And there's photos in the book that Maza came up with through you really just going through historical records and wherever she could find them that are historical photos that kind of represent the type of people that she's talking about in the book.
You got to talk to her about this when she was here for the Jaipur Mystery Festival.
Yes.
And I know that she had some of the photos on display, and it really is an incredible piece of history that we really don't know much about here in the US.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it until, you know, very little. You know, she even gets into the mind of Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, who fled the country during this war. And the Shadow King, the title refers to they decide to dress somebody up so it looks like he's come back because the country was so demoralized and unable to fight. And then there on the white horse on the hill, they think is Haile Selassie, who just appears for a brief moment. But it's really, you know, it's somebody dressed as him. And that's one meaning of the Shadow King. There's several.
That's The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu. What's some of your other books that you
like? Well, another one I really like is called Good Talk by Mira Jacob. And she actually was at the Jaipur Literature Festival as well. And this is a graphic novel. And this started, this starts with a conversation with her son. It's really a graphic biography because it's nonfiction. It started off with a conversation about her son who was infatuated with Michael Jackson. Her son's like 7 or 8 years old, but he starts asking her questions like, well, why did Michael Jackson change colors? And her son is mixed race. She's Indian. Her husband's Jewish. Am I going to change colors as I get older? You know, so she uses this as a way to get into race. And her drawings are pretty flat. She draws the people, but they're set against photos of New York City. And the drawings don't change of the people. So sometimes you're not realizing that you're about to have a very difficult conversation. There's nothing in the drawing that says, ooh, we're now going to have, you know, some really painful stuff to talk about. But I thought it felt very intimate to me. I thought it was a really wonderful look and a way to examine this topic. And you could read this book from the age of 10 or 12 through adults. It's meant for adults, but my 11-year-old daughter read it and loved it as well.
That's why I wanted to ask you about graphic novels and their appeal, because we often think, and we not we, but maybe as a society, or that might often be an idea that they're, it's something for children. It's a kind of a picture book. It's almost like a comic, but that's not the case at all.
Yeah,
graphic novels have explored a lot of political territory and heavy topics as well.
And this one is really meant for adults. It's not as heavy as adults, like, say, several years ago, Palestine by Joe Sacco, which is an amazing graphic novel that I'd highly recommend. But it really does deal in a very sophisticated way with adult issues. And but again, it can appeal to, it's a way to have these conversations too with high school kids, I think, as well, will enjoy it.
That's Good Talk by Mira Jacob. Well, Liesl Freudenstein. Are any graphic novels on your list, you know, given that they are still so incredibly popular?
Actually, surprisingly, no. I even though there were lots of lovely graphic novels that came out, Raina Telgemeier came out with a new one, Guts, which is pretty amazing and incredible, and everyone's liked it. There are also some ongoing series, Zeta the Space Girl, Jack the Giant, that are, you know, continue to sell very well. I didn't put any on my list this year.
That's okay. No judgment. I was just asking. Well, talk us through some of the other books, particularly for maybe some of the older, younger readers.
Okay, so I have Lalani of the Distant Sea, and sort of ongoing with the theme between Stephanie and Arson about getting different voices and using different mythologies to sort of tell a different tale. Lalani is by Erin Estrada Kelly, and she's actually Filipino. So she uses that storytelling as sort of a launching point for her story. It's not strictly Filipino myths, but you can see that there is a sort of another viewpoint going on to it. And if you like Grace Lynn or Kelly Barnhill and their use of stories and interspersed with sort of the action, the quest of the little girl, Erin has done this with her book. So it's her new sort of fantasy one where the mythology is told on one side, but then the girl goes through where it's side by side in a way. And I just found that it was a beautiful book. It was wonderful.
Say young adult?
It's like 8 to 12. So it's definitely firmly middle grade. If you're looking for a young adult, Pet, I also have National Book Award finalists on my list.
All right.
I missed the graphic novels, but I got the National Book Awards. Akawiki Enzi has a book called Pet, and it's a very, very slim book, but it's super, super powerful, and it sort of takes place, and I don't want to say utopian, because it's not that feeling about it, although everybody in society is getting along very well, lots of acceptance for gender fluidity, multiple sort of family dynamics, but you still have to pay attention and be aware, because even though things do on the surface look absolutely incredible and wonderful and everybody's thriving, if you don't pay very close attention, it slides back into darkness really, really quickly. So it's sort of vigilance. Is the word. And the thing is that may seem like a real pretty simple, obvious plot, but their writing is incredible. It's just slim, it's sparse, the way she gets into the mind, and it's not heavily descriptive. It's more just the words have feelings to them. So you don't need a lot of words to sort of get the idea across and get the message and get the setting and the feelings of everyone involved. It's amazing. I can see why it was a National Book Award finalist. I myself was also rooting for that one, but there you go.
Well, there is one book that I want you to talk about because the title alone is incredible. Abraham Lincoln, Pro Wrestler.
Oh, yeah. So going back, this is actually by Steve Shenkin, and he is, in fact, a 3-time National Book Award finalist. This is a book that's meant for 6 to 9-year-olds to sort of point out that history is not boring. History can be very exciting. So these kids are sitting in class, and the teacher says, open up your history book, and all the kids groan, and they say, history is boring, blah, blah, blah. And Abraham Lincoln hears them and comes out of this sort of magic cardboard box, which doesn't sound as good as Magic Treehouse, everyone agrees, in the book. But he does come out and he says, that's it, I'm not doing history anymore. And so the next pages are him just sitting and reading a newspaper, which is super boring. But all of the facts that Steve Shenkin uses to describe Lincoln, he tells Lincoln's jokes. He talks about why Lincoln grew a beard at one point. His, you know, place in the more obvious history, but he sort of, he really definitely brings him alive. But Abraham Lincoln ends up in this time period wanting to do something different, and so he becomes a pro wrestler.
Like you do.
Like you do. But it is a series, and it's great because it's very sly with its history. There's Abigail Adams, Pirate Queen. Nat Tucker and Neil Armstrong, Russell the Moon. I mean, so they're twisting history a little bit because these historical characters don't want to be static on a page. They want to be brought forth and alive. They're really fun. It's definitely 6 to 9 year olds. I read it yesterday. It was so great.
Well, there are a lot of other books on all of our guests' lists that we might not get to today, but they're all online at news.kgnu.org. Stephanie Shintelm, I want to go back to you. What were some of a couple of your other faves this year?
So to go to more in a nonfiction direction. Most of my nonfiction tends to revolve around food writing. I just really like reading about food. So one of my favorite books of the year was The Way We Eat Now by Bea Wilson. And I've read two of her other books, Consider the Fork, which is like about like the history of things like the fork and how that's evolved over time and how like different food technologies have evolved over time. And then First Bite, which is about how we learn to eat. Like she had kind of set out to write about how kids become picky eaters and kind of realize that there's actually a lot of adults who are like super picky eaters. So she kind of talks about like how like food how food interacts with like our memory and how, you know, different methods that maybe people could use to get over being picky eaters. So this one, The Way We Eat Now, is sort of an examination of how insane it is how we eat now, and how like, and just kind of a look at all over the world how similarly people eat now as compared to even 20 years ago, how like the like the simple, and like, I mean, there's different cuisines all over the world, but you can go to pretty much any big city in the world and get a pizza, or you can get pasta, or you can get sushi, or you can get a bibimbap, or, you know, like all these foods are all over the world. But there's also a lot of these similar ingredients, how things, you know, like vegetable oil is like the, one of the main ingredients in pretty much every country in the world right now. And like 30 years ago, it wasn't really even a thing. And she also talks about how basically at this point in history, we've eaten more healthily and more unhealthily simultaneously than at any point in the past. You know, it's like every household has, you know, potato chips and soda and all these sorts of things. But they're also, you know, people are very into these like health fad diets and eating lots of kale and quinoa and sort of these fad sorts of foods. So it's just a really interesting period of eating and how it's affecting us. So.
And we just have a couple of minutes left. Just a quick shout out to one of your other favorites this year.
I'll talk about, again, on nonfiction, The Light Years by Chris Rush. It's a memoir. He's an artist, and he tells basically the first 20 years of his life. Growing up in the 60s in a conservative Catholic home in New Jersey, but being that different kid and kind of coming to realize that he's gay and going through this hard sort of growing up and getting into a whole lot of drugs. And how it starts out in the 60s is seeming this very fun and loose thing, and like it's like freeing his mind and making him feel like he can explore it. But like it's a really intense read because he gets into a lot of drugs, and frankly at the end, like, you're kind of surprised that he's still alive. But it's really beautifully written. I mean, you could tell he's an artist just by the way that he writes and how, you know, and just the journey he goes through in the first 20 years of his life is intense and amazing.
That's The Light Years by Chris Rush. That's on Stephanie's Best Books of the Year list. Now, we have all of the books that we've talked about and many more online at news.kgnu.org. But we're almost out of time. We never get to all of them. But Arsene, has it been a good year for books and for book selling? Are people still reading books, or are we all just glued to our tablets and phones?
No, it's been a good year for us. Our sales have been up. Many independent stores are doing just fine. It's been a kind of a strange year. A lot of the books that are sold well this year are holdovers from last year. And this December, we're not going to have anything to equal Michelle Obama's memoir. That's the best-selling memoir of all time. and we were selling many, many copies last Christmas. So there's nothing quite to match that. But it's been pretty widespread. People come in, they love books, they buy new books, they buy used books. So we've been doing well, and I think people are hungry for stories and want time off of their computer, you know. So whether it's, you know, whether it's reading, whether it's listening to music, I do think people are looking for different ways of being in the world than just being on the screen.
Or listen to the radio or a podcast, yes, of the Radio Book Club. Lisa, are children reading, young people reading?
Oh, yes, days? Most definitely. You've got a lot of voracious readers that come in, buy stacks and stacks and stacks of books. And so it's really great.
Well, that's heartening. Well, yeah, this has always been one of my favorite shows to do of the year, taking a look at some of the best books of 2019. We only got to touch on some of our guests' favorite picks, but they are all online. The list of all of our favorite books, including some of mine, they're all at news.kgnu.org. But I would like to thank all of our guests today joining us from the Boulder Bookstore. We've had Stephanie Schildhelm, Liesl Freudenstein, and Arsene Kashkashian, as always, and my co-host of the Radio Book Club. Don't forget, you can subscribe to a podcast of that. Just search for KGNU, the Boulder Bookstore, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. I know it's a busy time of year, so I appreciate you taking time to come out this morning. Thanks.
Thank you. Maeve.